Issues Etc. regular guests Pastor Matt Harrison, Deaconess Pam Nielsen, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller will be speaking at the premier worship conference of 2011. Sing His Praise, His Love Declare. It's July 27th through the 29th on the campus of Concordia University, Nebraska. For more information on the worship conference, Sing His Praise, His Love Declare, visit Seward2011.org or call 402-643-2983.
To borrow without limit and without thinking how we are going to pay this back seems to me stupid and immoral.
Those of us who are Christians are bound by Jesus' command to protect the least of these the most. So we ask, what would Jesus cut?
Adults sometimes speak of hymns as though they're impossibly hard for children to learn, but I think most of the time they're projecting.
Are you a damned sinner under the law? I hope so. You must be. If you aren't, leave the space. Christ is not for you.
Thank you for providing theology for clerical collar, white collar, and blue collar.
The funding was declined on the part of the state of Illinois, and the letter that declined the funding said your agency has made it clear that it does not intend to comply with the Illinois Religious Freedom Protection and Civil Union Act. The law applies to foster care and adoption services, thus there is no meeting of minds as to the fiscal year 2012 foster care and adoption contracts. That's a letter to Catholic Charities from the state of Illinois refusing funding and cutting them off, essentially. Why? Well, apparently because Catholic Charities refuses to place children with unmarried cohabiting couples. They have scruples about such things. Now, while the state can give money to whoever the state wants to give money to, I wonder, is there a political motivation here, an agenda more than just having to do with individual funding for agencies at work? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live this Thursday afternoon, the 12th of July. Jennifer Roback-Morse joins us from the Ruth Institute. We'll get her reaction to that story about Catholic Charities in the state of Illinois. Gretchen Pasentino will be with us a little bit later. She'll explain the Tibetan Buddhist mandala. It's a meditation tool. Looks like intricate sculptures of sand on the part of Buddhist monk. A monk will spend weeks doing one of these things and then destroy it, demonstrating the transience of this existence. And then, to round off this hour of Issues Etc., we'll hear from you from the Issues Etc. comment line. We can also hear from you for the next hour, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. You can send us an email here in the studio, talkback at issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc. Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. She taught economics for 15 years at Yale and George Mason Universities, and she's author of the book Smart Sex and Love and Economics. Jennifer, welcome back.
Hi, Todd.
You know, there's a game that dangerous games that teenagers play, sometimes with cars, sometimes with bikes, where they go at each other straight head on, and they call it chicken because the first one to turn aside, to blink, is the loser. Are we watching a political game of chicken between state of Illinois and Catholic Charities?
Well, it sure looks that way, doesn't it? I mean, they're just trying to see who's going to give first. But I think that the precedent in these things is that the state always wins because, let's face it, the state's got the bigger vehicle. The state's got all of the powers to tax, to regulate, and ultimately to put people in jail. So, you know, it would be a little bit like a chicken game between a kid on a bike and a Mack truck on the other side. So I applaud Catholic Charities of Illinois for standing up to this situation, but that is what it looks like from here.
How, it's being called catastrophic in the news, but how important, how monumental is the decision, like the entire state of Illinois, to essentially say to Catholic Charities, we don't need your services any longer?
That's what's interesting about it, and it sounds like you guys are getting a lot of coverage there locally because you're basically partly in Illinois, aren't you, Todd?
I'm fully in Illinois right now, both feet standing firmly in the state.
I think of you all as St. Louis, but, you know, so out here, it's a, you know, it's kind of a, it's a story from way far away, you know, but you all are getting all the details, which is really kind of helpful, I think, because usually these stories are portrayed as, Catholic Charities is getting shut down, or Catholic Charities is stomping its foot and going off with a tantrum kind of a thing. But really, as in all of these cases, it is, as you suggest, a kind of game, you know, of chicken to see who's going to blink first. But in the end, when states go to gay marriage, basically what they're going to say is that we control who does adoption, and if you need to comply with our rules, or we're not going to let you play. And so that's what's kind of interesting about your case there, is it seems like there is some kind of negotiation going on, which doesn't seem to be the usual case. I'm not quite sure why that is. I was struck by the title of the bill there, the Religious Liberty Protection Act. Is that what they called it? The Religious Liberty Protection and Civil Unions Act?
Yes. You know,
as if the first point of this bill was to protect religious liberties, and civil unions were thrown on as an afterthought. The plain fact of the matter is that going to civil unions is what required the state to make some decision about who's going to be allowed to do adoptions, because now that the state is controlling marriage and taking over marriage, they're also going to take over adoption, and in a way that they have never had to do before or even had to consider before. So it really does illustrate the point that we've been trying to make all along, that the move to redefine marriage is not just some small little thing that happens in isolation. It's part of a much wider set of societal trends that will necessarily be set into motion in the wake of redefining marriage.
Does it demonstrate that the difference between same-sex marriage in practice, in policy, the difference between same-sex marriage and same-sex union is no difference at all?
Yeah, you know what? That's the other thing that's very striking about that, isn't it? I mean, in other words, civil unions are being sold as some type of alternative to same-sex marriage, but in point of fact, for all practical purposes, it amounts to the same thing. So at least in the state of Illinois, that's the way they're defining it. So, you know, if you're going to place children for adoption and you want to have a contract with any government agency, you have to be willing to place children with anybody that we say is married or that we say has a civil union. But that's what's odd about it, though, is it seems to me in that same story that you're quoting from, there were other adoption agencies that were saying, oh, it's perfectly okay, you know, we can sign on to this, it's okay. And I wasn't clear if that was because they were already saying that the people they worked with had to be Christians, or if there was some other, or if they just didn't care about placing kids with same-sex couples. I wasn't clear on that from the story that you're talking about there. But in many, many, many areas of social service, and certainly in counseling and things like that, if you feel you can't serve somebody, if you're a counselor and, you know, somebody comes to you with a problem that you don't feel qualified to handle, typically what you do is you'd refer the person to somebody who can help them. That would be, you know, that's usually what happens. And so certainly in Boston and in Massachusetts, when they moved to same-sex marriage, the Catholic Charities agencies there said, look, we're happy. We have all along been referring same-sex couples to other agencies, and we're happy to continue doing that, but we would like to be able to operate in accordance with our value system. So it's not as if there's nobody there to serve same-sex couples, but we want to be able to operate in accordance with our value system, and that is precisely the thing that is not being permitted. That referral policy, which in most areas is good enough and with, I think, reason would show should be good enough, that is precisely what is not being treated as good enough in this context.
What's the relationship in practical fact of the advocacy for same-sex marriage and the advocacy for same-sex adoption? Can they be separated?
Well, you know, that's a good question. These questions come up all the time, don't they? And in effect, what people are saying is that if once we have same-sex marriage, no one's allowed to have any reservations whatsoever about same-sex adoption. And so that seems to me to be a, you know, kind of a, that is a significantly different and further step, you would think. But it's not being treated as such. And it points to the fact that I've been saying all along, too, that that when you redefine marriage, you will, in effect, redefine parenthood. So we're now saying if we're going to allow same-sex couples to have a civil union, it necessarily follows from that that anyone who does adoption must agree that that same-sex couples are just as good a parent as opposite-sex couples, that everybody has to act as if they believe that to be true. And that seems to me to be quite a different step from saying we're going to just let gay people do what they want, you know, or we're going to just provide some government services or government recognition or government benefits. We're just going to provide benefits to them, and it's not going to affect anybody else, not going to hurt anybody else. That turns out, quite obviously in this case, to not be the case at all.
Well, I'm not going to say who wins in this because no one can really say. How do you think this plays out? Because I think it's fair to say, and I think you probably would agree, the Catholic Charities is not going to budge on this issue. They're going to. They've demonstrated they're ready to stick by their guns, come hell or high water. So, what's the outcome of this?
Yeah, the outcome of it is that they've got children. It sounds like they've got children who are currently in foster homes that are going to have to be administered by somebody else. I guess that's what is considered catastrophic about this. The Catholic Charities is already operating. They've already placed kids with, you know, in various homes. Presumably, the kids that Catholic Charities is placing around the state, they're placing them in opposite-sex couple homes or in single-parent homes. I mean, that's what their policy is. So all of the kids are in homes that meet all of the possible criteria that the state has, you know. So those kids should be perfectly okay. Right, it's not like you've placed like Catholic Charities is placing them in some place that's putting them in danger or anything like that. It's that Catholic Charities will no longer be allowed to be in the business. So those kids and their placement is somehow going to have to be administered by somebody else, right? And you wouldn't think that you'd have to take the kids out of those homes and put them someplace else. You wouldn't think that would be necessary. Somehow that's going to have to be taken over by somebody else. And that, I guess that's what took place. I'm reading between the lines now of that one report that you sent me, but it looked like that's what went on in Chicago when they had to shut down some or do some kind of transitioning. That's what looked like was going on.
Dr. Jennifer Roback-Morse is founding president of the Ruth Institute based in San Marcos, California. Jennifer, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We'll have a link to the Ruth Institute and to Jennifer's blog at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues, etc. Comment line after this. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most radio talk shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely on you to pay for the production, salary, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin asking you to consider making a tax-deductible gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Lutheran Public Radio. The address? LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. LPR, Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend on you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Wouldn't it be great if more of your fellow parishioners listened to Issues Etc.? Well, here's an easy way for you to publicize Issues Etc. at your church. Go to the support page of our website, issuesetc.org, and you'll find a short paragraph to include in your weekly church bulletin. Copy and paste the text for your church secretary or pastor to include each week in the Sunday bulletin. The bulletin blurb is updated weekly, issuesetc.org. Stay connected, issuesetc.org.
Did you know that you can listen to Issues Etc. 24/7? Check out our website, issuesetc.org, and go to the Listen On Demand page. Listen at the gym, in your kitchen, in your garden, on your iPod, your computer, or in your car. The technology may be new, but the truth never changes. Issues Etc. On Demand audio available for your convenience at issuesetc.org. 10 hours of new programming each week. issuesetc.org and click Listen On Demand.